Hi everyone, this is David Yano with another episode of Coping with COVID. You can learn more about coping with COVID and sign up for the next session at vcce.org/coping. Tonight's guest is Pam Larkin. Pam is a clinical therapist in Chicago with a background in community mental health. She is one of the co-founders of Colorful, a group of women of color who fully embraced our Christian and cultural identities. Let's listen as Renee Cunningham interviews Pam about peer and family relationships in a COVID world.
All right. Well, welcome, everyone. The goal of this class, which we call Coping with COVID, is the belief that even in disorienting times, extenuating circumstances, we can experience our highest good. That the good news of the gospel is that we can flourish even in times that are really, really difficult, kind of like right now. And so throughout the summer, we're having conversations with various people about what it means to flourish during isolation and upheaval and change, most of which we didn't choose. And so tonight, I'm so excited to have Pam Larkin with us. Pam is a clinical therapist. Who fully embrace their Christian and qualities. And I have the privilege of leading this with Pam and other members of our leadership team. So Pam, thank you for being with us tonight. I'm so glad you're here.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here too. We're getting some feedback that the video is a little bit choppy, so appreciate you guys letting us know when you're experiencing that, because that will help us if we need to repeat anything. So
that's true. So use that chat even more important at this point. So, Pam, I would love, before we dive in and talk about our topic about relationships, I would just love for people to get to know you a little bit. Kind of tell us, so hear your story, where you're from. So if you could tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe the work that you do, we would love to get to know you.
Yeah. Well, hey, everybody. As Renee said, I am on the leadership team with the neighborhood, and I am from the suburbs of Chicago, so can't claim Chicago born, but I can claim Chicago adjacent. So
there you go.
In the west suburbs of Chicago. I have three other siblings. I'm a twin. We grew up in what a lot of my college friends call the heart of America. So if anybody has seen Friday Night Lights, that is kind of how I describe kind of our growing up experience of football games on Fridays and hanging out with friends on Saturdays. So so I'm trying to think of what else would be helpful for you guys to know. So went to college up in Evanston, that is really, I think, where my faith became real in a different way. So my family were all believers. I'm the kid who accepted Christ at 5 years old because I was afraid of going to hell.
We know lots of people with that story.
Exactly. But you know, the fun thing about college is I think that's a really unique time of getting to know yourself. And I think I was very clear that I didn't know myself and that I must have been created by someone, and really had an opportunity to explore kind of those questions of who am I and who is God? And how do I have a deeper relationship with him? College was also the time where I struggled with depression and anxiety, and it was actually the first time that I saw a therapist. And that experience really changed my life. It is why I decided to go into this profession. I was pre-med before that and kind of got out of that once I realized I didn't like blood.
Yeah. That'll make you make a switch, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But got some dear friends through my pre-med program. So I'm really grateful for that. But decided to become a therapist and specifically was interested in learning more about the integration of Christianity and therapy. And so I didn't go to school right away for therapy. I actually was on staff with InterVarsity Christian Fellowship for a couple of years. And once I had kind of dealt with some of my burnout from college, made the transition to grad school at Wheaton College. So I have been in the field for almost 10 years now, which just makes me feel kind of old, but that's okay.
Got 10 years of credibility. That's a good thing.
Did community mental health. I worked all throughout the city of Chicago. It's really what introduced me to Chicago. So worked in the west suburbs, worked on the west side. I worked in the north suburbs. I did a lot of traveling to the south suburbs. So I grew up so much and learned so much by that experience. And met my husband while working in community mental health. He was the first person. We were actually on the same team, did some secret dating, which was really fun. I highly recommend it. Grew up a lot from that experience, had a lot of different leadership opportunities. I really loved working with that population. It was adults who struggle with severe mental illness as well as alcohol use. So a pretty intense job, but something that I felt really called to, especially working with, they were also an under-resourced population, which was really important to me. So did that for 8 years, and now I am in a group private practice called Optimum Joy Clinical Counseling Center, not center, just counseling. And what can I say about that? It's been a breath of fresh air. The group practice is a group of Christians who really believe in providing good clinical services while still incorporating faith to the degree to which the client wants to explore that. So I've been there for almost 2 years now. I get to supervise some staff around clinical operations, which has been really, really fun to still get to do a little bit of that without some of the stress of kind of my other job. So,
That's awesome. And can you tell us a little bit about Colorful?
Oh, okay. So Colorful is a group that I co-founded with a couple of other Christian women of color. And our goal right now is to be a space of support and connection with one another, whether that's emotional, spiritual support, as well as networking support and just kind of answering random clinical questions that come up. Our goal also is to bring more visibility to women of color therapists. I think that there is definitely a market or a need for clients to see women of color. The problem is it's hard to find us. And then once you find them, it's hard to find someone who has an opening. So, that is part of our dream.
That's awesome. I'm so excited about that. That's so cool. Do you guys have a website?
We have a Facebook group right now.
Oh, awesome. Very cool. Yeah. Under the same name, I'm assuming, right?
That is correct.
Very cool. Well, you can check it out. So, well, thank you for telling us a little bit about your story. I love your story because I feel like it is such a cool combination of, or maybe compilation is a better way to say it, of different worlds and experiences that have really formed this really beautiful understanding of our city, of who Jesus is, about what it means to love him and love our neighbors. And you just, one of my favorite parts of leading with you is that you just have stories from so many perspectives. And I think that that makes, you know, certainly me as a leader, a richer leader, but then also our community is so much richer. So I love hearing your stories in the various places. And so what we want to talk about tonight is about relationships, because 2020 has just done a number on so many relationships. We've been talking a little bit about this, you know, and I think what most of us have experienced is a really significant change in the patterns and spaces for how we interact with each other, be it dear friends that we've known for a really long time, or family members, or even like our casual exchanges that we're accustomed to having with various people. And so let's dive right in. What do you, you know, what is your perspective, or what do you see happening really within kind of the quality and of our relationships in a COVID world?
You know, I think the absence of relationships is something that has come up a lot for people. I think especially that feeling of loneliness that we talked a little bit about the other day, Renee. You know, there's three different types of loneliness that people can experience. One is intimate loneliness, which is kind of the loneliness from not being in a romantic relationship or having a romantic partner. Then there is the loneliness from relationships, and that's more kind of general. So missing seeing my coworkers because I haven't been in the office since March. Missing my friends, getting to see them in person. That kind of encompasses everybody else. And then there's the communal loneliness. And that's actually connected to groups of people meeting together for a larger purpose and for a sense of belonging. And so I think that especially in the beginning of COVID, there was a lot of conversations around these relationships that people were missing or that people were longing for. So that's one thing that I could say that I've noticed in terms of relationships, because there's been an absence of the way that we used to do relationships.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I think a lot of that loneliness in some ways maybe has caught us off guard. Right. You know, that wasn't maybe loneliness that we weren't expecting, or maybe we're busy, so it's surprising to us that we're lonely. Is that, that just seems to be this conversation I'm hearing is like, oh, I'm actually surprised by my own loneliness.
Yeah. Like a good example of that for me is I was going for a walk around the park, and I just was like so sad by all these pockets of people, but are like kind of having to avoid each other and kind of being scared of each other. And I, you know, I think I'm not quite sure which of those lonelies I felt, probably more of a communal, because there's this, man, I really want to feel a part of humanity right now, but feeling like we're a little bit separated. So,
And to feel like, you know, our proximity is a threat to ourselves or to another person is just so, that's so sad and disorienting. So, I notice, like, if I see my neighbor walking down the street, it's like I almost want to say to them, like, I'm smiling to you under this mask.
Yes.
You know, like, I want to build connection with you, mm-hmm. Even if I'm really, really awkwardly, like, walking in the street to avoid you.
Yes, absolutely. Or, like, what would it look like to say, hey, thanks for moving to the other side of the street.
Right.
Or, you know, thanks for putting your mask on as soon as you saw me. There's none of that type of communication, but there's definitely a feeling of separation because of those things.
Right. And it's interesting you say that, because I think we did a lot of that, you know, with our facial expressions, mm-hmm. Or mannerisms. And because our faces, you know, much of our faces are covered now, mm-hmm. maybe we have to do that with a verbal cue like that. Mm-hmm. as a way of expressing what I'm trying to communicate to you, but maybe you can't see because you can only see my eyes at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the other thing that's interesting about loneliness is that loneliness actually makes us more afraid to be in relationship with people. I was listening to a podcast where someone was talking about it, but she said that there is a fear that if I reach out to you, I either won't get my needs met or that I'll be rejected. And so I'm afraid of that experience. And so I'm just going to continue to be alone.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so it's interesting because it's like, no, there's actually something to be afraid of right now, which is COVID.
Yeah.
And so I would imagine, I'm just putting this thought together now, but that would also increase our sense of loneliness, right? Because we're afraid to be physically close to each other.
Right. And so, like, our predisposition of being lonely, if I'm hearing you right, makes us build apprehension. So if we're already lonely, then it actually keeps us even from reaching out to maybe towards the thing that we desire or need. Or long for in some safe version of it now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. And you know, what I'm aware of is in all of this, there's so many of these relationships that have shifted. You know, you mentioned like going to work. I'm missing my coworkers. Mm-hmm. You know, can you talk a little bit about like, so here we are for these lonely people, mm-hmm. We're experiencing loneliness, and then we've had all these relationships that maybe aren't in the same places or formats that they used to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And so how are we kind of adapting to that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think you said this earlier when you were talking about essentially, it sounded like resiliency, like in our ability to thrive even during COVID.
Yeah.
And that is one thing that I feel so proud of. And I'm not sure who exactly to be proud of. Like, just like, you know, like people are figuring out a way to still live their lives and to still be in relationship, albeit if it's really weird, like, I was doing a video call with some friends and all of a sudden we're like working out in our workout clothes and doing yoga together. And, you know, it's just, it's so fascinating. So I do feel like people are making a way to have connection, even if that connection looks different. And that gives me a lot of hope because there's creativity in that. There's also a lot of, I think, just understanding and grace towards each other that it may look different, and that's okay. So,
And I imagine there's some grief entangled in there too.
Oh, totally. Right?
Like I want to have a, you know, a familiar family meal or a familiar birthday party experience, or I had a friend move a couple months ago and I thought, all I want to do is send you off the way that I have instinct to do that, but can't. And so there's some grief in that. Like there's creativity, like you're saying, and then how do I process that grief so I can embrace the new thing?
Yeah. Brené Brown talks about grief a lot, that COVID, what we're experiencing is a collective grief. And I, Bessel van der Kolk, who wrote the book, The Body Keeps the Score, he would also say that what we're experiencing is a collective trauma. So whatever language you use around that is fine, but there is a sense of we're all experiencing this. Experiencing it because things are different than what we've ever experienced before.
Yeah. And then, you know, I what I'm so familiar with is like, so, you know, we're in these spaces where we're finding like new ways to forge relationship. And then it seems like every once in a while you get to this maybe impasse with a new person or a new dynamic where you have to like negotiate your COVID boundaries. Like, what are we familiar with? What are we comfortable with? What maybe someone invites you to something that you don't feel comfortable with? That just seems like such a new way of relating with familiar people.
Yeah. And I feel like that, I think having those conversations around what are you comfortable with is so difficult, because I think it hits on, unfortunately, it's like tied into some political stuff. It's tied into social beliefs. It's tied into spirituality. It's tied into where people live, like what part of the country they live in. And so it is a really difficult thing to navigate. What I think is helpful is a few things. One is to be open and transparent about what you're comfortable with and what you're not. And I think that you can do that by being assertive. And what I mean by assertive is asking for what you need and being okay if you don't get it. So if what you say is, I really need for all of us to wear masks during this outing, and if that person isn't able to comply, then you're okay with that. But you've at least kind of said what it is that you feel like you need in order to be comfortable. I have a couple. Go ahead.
And then making your decision from their willingness to comply, right? So this is what I need to be able to be present. And if we're not all on the same page, then I might have to sit this one out.
Yeah. And oftentimes what I found, especially because it's a lot of like group decisions. I have found that then the whole group makes a shift, right? If one person isn't comfortable, then the whole group makes the shift. And so I think that is a really unique thing about COVID. You know, I think that there are some cultural groups where they operate more that way of like, let's have a complete consensus. I know a lot of Asian communities operate that way and some African communities do. But that has not been the case for, I think, the white culture or white American culture. So that is a really unique piece, I think, about COVID and having those conversations.
Yeah, that feels like a beautiful muscle to learn, to develop, and things to learn that we would defer or that groups would pivot towards a space that everyone can participate maybe in a comfortable way. Can you talk a little bit of maybe about like how some, you know, I think one of the tricky things I'm finding is like, so maybe what I was comfortable with June 1st is not necessarily what I'm comfortable with August 1st. And that feels like a pretty unfamiliar place too, because most of the time when we set boundaries or we set comfort levels with various people and relationships, it's like what we say kind of sticks for more than 8 weeks. And so, you know, can you talk a little bit about like how to have some dexterity within our relationships as our comfort levels change. You know, I think that's kind of, I think there's some discomfort in that as we figure out how to be together.
Yeah, for sure. Especially because we operate from patterns that we notice about someone. Like, okay, if I know that Renee really likes to drink milk, then I'm going to make sure to bring milk every time I come to visit you, right?
Right.
And so it is a little bit tricky because the reality is people's comfort level can change. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the benefit is that since we're all experiencing this, I don't think it would come as a surprise to anyone if something shifted for you. I think what I do kind of talk to people about is how much of why you feel uncomfortable do you want to share with the other person? So if someone has some medical conditions that make them more vulnerable during this time, do they tell people that? You know, I think that is up to them to disclose that.
Yeah.
Or if they're, you know, if something has happened in their family and now they're caring for a loved one who's really sick, you know, that could be another reason why it shifts. Someone gets pregnant and they need to make a shift because of that as well. So I think that is the one thing that I would coach people with is just, you know, what do you want to tell people?
Yeah. And, you know, I do think to your yoga example of being with friends and, you know, I think it's really beautiful to watch our friendships and our relationships, maybe even within our families or even in our workplaces, like flourish or take on new life in this, in these new constraints. Mm-hmm. That feels like the beautiful promise of the kingdom that we might be connected with one another mm-hmm. and learn from each other and be challenged by one another. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting, you know, I think maybe in our loneliness, it's easy to see it as like, well, this is just, there's just relational poverty in all these places, right? Mm-hmm. Because we're not together in the ways that we want to be. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just aware of, as we're talking, like, what does it look like to be pivoted towards this new way and the joy in life that Jesus might want to give us with each other? That's a really beautiful promise in this space.
You know, I think I'm going to steal this from Dr. Marissa G. Franco. She actually was on a podcast episode from Therapy for Black Girls. Mm-hmm. And to your point of what you were just saying, you know, I think what we can do to combat that sense of loneliness or that sense of I'm in poverty from all relationships is to recognize that, like, not all of life is bad. Mm. Not all relationships am I cut off from. Mm. She would also say that it's important to recognize that this is temporary. And even though this temporary is a lot longer than any of us ever thought or imagined that it would be, I think there is a hope that this will not be forever. And even from like a faith standpoint, you know, we know that the separation that we have experienced with God because of Jesus, that separation, like that gap has been filled, right? Mm-hmm. And that it's only a matter of time before we get to be with him. And so mm-hmm. I think, I think that we can still have hope.
It builds like an imagination for that, right? Like mm-hmm. in the same way that we long to be together again, you know, I just want to be with my circle of friends. And I really just want to hug everybody when they walk in the door. Mm-hmm. This is that part of this has been really hard. Mm-hmm. And so what does it look that gives me kind of new perspective on what it means to long to be with Jesus and to be in that relation, that proximity with him. Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful picture. Mm-hmm. If you're on the call and you're listening, and have a question or maybe like a topic that you'd like us to pivot towards for a minute here, you can just put your thought in the chat. And we can go back to that or can answer that if we can, or at least talk about it for a minute or two. So you can just put it in the chat and then we can see it. Pam, before, as we're like letting people do that, can you name the three types of loneliness again, just so that we have them?
So there's the intimate loneliness, the relationship loneliness, and the communal loneliness.
Okay. Those are really helpful distinguishing things.
Mm-hmm. Renee, there is someone who asked a question in the Q&A section of it. Can you see that?
Yeah, thanks. Perfect. Yeah, I do think, I think the question here that someone put in was, is just that, you know, this new environment has created some space in relationships that were previously toxic or maybe more challenging than others, be it on a team at work or, you know, in a family relationship. COVID has created some distance in those relationships. Mm-hmm. Can you maybe talk about like what, you know, and I think for a lot of people, there's some reprieve or maybe some relief of having that space. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if we're in those situations, what could we be thinking about as we think about maybe at some point re-engaging with those people? Mm-hmm. You know, what might we think about in the interim or consider maybe even ask ourselves about those relationships? I don't know if that makes sense, but that's kind of what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, it's kind of like, how do you take the opportunity that you have right now of space to maybe experience some healing and some restoration? I 100% will always tell people that therapy is a great space to do that in.
Yeah.
I have actually gotten a couple new clients who, because of COVID, really wanted to use the space and time to grow personally, in their own kind of relationship dynamics. So I would 100% recommend therapy. I also think that there is a space for personal examine, not to blame the person for the toxic relationships, but I think there is a sense of, well, what is my part in this?
Right.
Is there something that I'm doing that's drawing these type of people? Am I trying to heal a different wound? And I keep finding myself in these relationships over and over again because I'm actually trying to heal a wound from maybe childhood. I often see that. I think that's a really thoughtful question, and I get the relief that comes with having space from people.
Especially in when we aren't at that, when very few people are at their best right
now
and at the top of their game. Someone else asked, what are your thoughts on COVID fatigue and the impact of relationships? Have you heard that phrase? That phrase is new to me. Have you heard that phrase, Pam?
It is new to me as well. I can guess.
Let's guess. Go for it.
Okay. I think a little bit of psychoeducation. So I would say that all of us have what's called a window of tolerance. And that is the window in which, when we are in the middle of this, we are the best regulated within our bodies. During a pandemic, during grief, that window of tolerance gets smaller and smaller. And that causes us to become more weary, or maybe we become more anxious, or maybe we become more depressed. The ability of our bodies to regulate and calm ourselves down or to wake ourselves up, that gets impacted by COVID. So I would imagine its impact on relationships. I think it takes a lot of energy to speak to people virtually through video. I think the reality of I can watch myself while I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty distracting.
Yeah, it's so weird.
It's so weird. And that is not the normal, right? And
right.
So I think that when people have been doing that all day, like let's say for work, then when they have a get together with their friends, it's like, man, I don't want to do another video conversation.
Right.
So I think also just the feeling of immobility, which that's really, that really is a trauma response. And so our inability to go out and to run into people and to have that movement also causes quite a bit of fatigue.
By the virtual, or by the fact of just being relatively stationary.
Yes.
Hmm.
You know, even when it comes to work, if people were not already working remotely and now they are, so they no longer have that transition space of getting to work before they got home to make that shift. That also causes fatigue.
I think I had barely a 9-minute commute from my house to the church office, and I had to grieve my collective 18 minutes of loss very early I did not realize what that afforded me in an ability to transition towards my work and away from my work, and then towards my family in an intentional way. And so it's so interesting to think about that, and then the margin, or the capacity we have to interact with each other or solve conflict with each other, or make a decision. Lots of people have had to make life-shaping decisions again in a stressful time when they're not at their best. Do you have any recommendations or thoughts on that? When the school decision was made for many of us tonight, for Chicago Public Schools, but there are people that are making decisions about jobs and about maybe a living situation. How might we think about decision making when, again, all of these variables are shifting? I don't know if you have any small thoughts on that.
Yeah.
I know I'm sure we could talk out an hour about that one in general, but
how to help people make decisions during this time. Feels like a stump question, Renee.
I didn't mean to. That's not fair.
You're totally
at the end.
Fine. You're totally, totally fine. I think that right now people are having a clearer sense of what's important and what's not important in life.
Yeah.
And so, that's why there's so many people who are moving right now. I think that's why so many parents have talked about homeschooling their kids or getting a nanny or moving in with family. You know, I think that COVID has shown us more of what we need to survive and what is important. And so I think some reflection on that could be helpful. I think also, I think some grace to yourself that you're making the best decision you can with the information that you have in this moment. I think is also really important to keep in mind. And I think I would ask kind of the question of like, where is God in all of this? Or like, how are you accessing God in all of this? Or how are you turning to him in all of this?
Yeah.
Because even though so much is changing, we know that he is constant. Yeah. So can we anchor, can we find hope or peace and resting with him in the midst of all this?
Yeah, that's so good. You there, that was not a sub question whatsoever. That's such rich insight. Thank you. That's very,
you're welcome.
That's very admirable at 8:44 p.m. So thank you very much after what I'm assuming was a full day for you. So I think that's really beautiful because I, you know, we are hearing people like leave the city or like move back home, wherever that is, to a place that maybe 2 years ago they thought, well, never will I ever, or they're making decisions to change, to make a career shift or to join resources with another family that was just not even in their scope 6 months ago. And so I hear right on the money and saying, this is just this time where our, what we value is coming to the surface, and, you know, what we desire even might be coming to the surface. And so how do we allow for those values and desires to be shaped by Jesus? And then he's that center point, right? That says, okay, as I'm discerning this, you know, with me and Jesus, with my community, I'm also tethered to this center that's not changing, which is just really beautiful hope for people that feel kind of lonely and isolated and disoriented. As we close tonight, I was just wondering if you could pray for us in this place, maybe in that place of longing to be together, of longing to be in relationship with one another, even in the midst of. Would you pray for us tonight as we kind of all are aware of that?
Sure. Father, we're grateful for your presence and for the sense that even when things are changing, that you are not.
Yeah.
And pray, Father, that you would bring hope and life to the weary and fatigued. Father, that you would bring peace to those who are feeling anxious. God, and that you would bring peace to those who are fearful of their loneliness, God, who are feeling consumed by it, who long for a relationship but aren't sure how to get it. Father, would you show us all the way to be in community with one another, even from these different places? Yeah, would you give us strength when we need it? God, be with the parents who are needing to make decisions regarding school. Pray for lots of just peace and rest for them and wisdom. And I pray, God, for folks who are single and are longing for intimate relationship. We ask, God, that you would just give them lots of courage and lots of opportunities to find new ways of being as they search for ways to date during COVID. We pray all these things in your name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you for talking to me tonight and talking to us. Yeah, it's a joy. I wish that I could be like, and now act two, and let's bring up another topic. I could talk for hours too, but thank you so much. It was just a joy to have a conversation in this space about all the things that, like you said, we're all experiencing. So I'm so grateful.
No problem. Glad to be here. Thanks for inviting
Absolutely. Well, friends, I hope you have a wonderful evening. We will see you next week. Good night.
Bye.